Association of Spades.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Static and Distortion podcast. I am Robert.
I'm John.
And it's just us. Okay, but I have to preface this. Last year, it was just us too.
It was.
It's the Sean and Robot show for the year end, and I actually kind of like this. I think I want to make this your tradition where it's just you and I on the last podcast of the year.
Well, we're the only two that listen to new music, I think. So.
We really are. No, Coop does. Coop does check out new music, but Coop, Sir Coop is unavailable right now. So
he listens to the new music he likes. Well, yeah. I guess we all do that kind of. But I'm a little bit more open minded. You just listen to everything.
I do.
Everything. You're like a new music slut.
I am. I'm just blowing bands and SoundClouds and just everything. YouTube videos and everything. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to cover something here real quick. This is our year-end wrap up. Sean, I'm going to call you Sean, and you're going to call me Robot because that's okay. Sean does songs. He's always done songs. He's done songs going back like 15 years, haven't you?
Yep, I have. Yeah. Back to when they were mix CDs, and I had to keep it to 80 minutes.
Shit. I do albums. I've done albums like the past 4 or 5 years. So between the two of us, you're going to hear at least a new song you've never heard, or you're going to get an album recommendation you've never heard. But for now...
Or you won't.
Yeah. But for now, fuck all of that. I'm going to be serious now. John Schenberger has not heard Adele's Hello yet.
I have not.
I'm sending it to him right now, and you're going to mute yourself, and you're going to listen to it. And I will carry us for about 45 seconds while you do that.
Am I going to cry?
You just might. Okay. All right. Here it is. I sent it to you on Facebook. My internet's being weird, too. So listen to that.
In the meantime, is mine. That's all right.
Yeah. And you also haven't heard...
It will capture my reactions. How about that?
Yeah. You also haven't heard anything from The Weeknd. And the reason I mentioned The Weeknd is because it may or may not be on my top 10 list of the year, but
we'll find out after the music news.
So go ahead and listen to this, and I'm going to go ahead and recap everything for our listeners, and then you'll come back in.
All right.
So as I mentioned, I do top 10 albums. Me and another contributor to the Static and Distortion podcast, Chanel, have done that for the last, I want to say about 4 or 5 years. And as we mentioned, John has done his top songs, dating back about 12, 15 years. We did a best of in 2014 as well, and it was John and I, Glass has gone out of his way to mention he doesn't listen to new music. And Coop, he listens to new music, but I don't know how often he really gets into it. I don't know if he keeps track of it. I think that's more so it. I don't think he keeps track of his favorite new albums or favorite new songs or whatever it might be. Whereas John and I have specifically had a ritual where we keep track of it throughout the year, and we'll add to lists and take away from lists and everything like that. So by the time we get to today, December 30th, 10:32 Central Time, we have a comprehensive list of all of our top favorites, almost favorites, on the bubble if you're a March Madness person. And we'll go ahead and post these on the blog. Shen has been doing it on Facebook. I haven't done anything yet. I kind of do a catch-all list, and I'll post it on the blog just as we did last year. I also have a playlist that covers all of my favorite albums. If John wants me to, I can either post his playlist of his favorite songs, or I can just throw them onto mine, whatever it might be. So
I'll post my list.
Yeah. But that's basically what we're going to be covering tonight. I'm really hoping that you find something new that you may not have heard before. Or if you're like me, maybe you get validation if you like an album and then you see all these other blogs are like, yeah, that's a great album. You're like, fuck yeah, I've been telling everyone, go listen to this. And people don't pay attention to me. So I kind of get validation out of it. So,
all right. So now I've listened to some of that. Sort of, although you were way louder than YouTube was. So I was just kind of like, I guess Adele's going on back there. I don't know what's going on. I'm just watching the video and just kind of surreal. And it sounded like an Adele song.
That's all you have to say?
Yeah.
Fuck. Fuck.
That was a failed experiment. I'll listen to it after the podcast, and I will blog about it.
I mean, because she's kind of blowing up. You know what I mean?
Well, didn't she already blow up like 4 years ago?
I know. But she's re-blowing up, I guess. I did not know this. She played Bonnaroo in 2008.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. In the middle of Sunday, people were like, who is this Amy Winehouse knockoff? And then it became Adele. So, do you want to... I don't have a guitar. I don't have anything that makes noise.
I'm
set up. Don't worry. Like crazy.
All right. We ready for this? Cutting out like crazy?
Yeah.
Am I here?
You're here. You sounded like a Mike Myers sketch from Saturday Night Live for a second.
You sounded fine the whole time, so because maybe it's awesome. Not me. Maybe it's you.
No. I'm
maybe
great.
It's your damn internet.
No.
All right, whatever. Go. Hey, everybody. It's time for the news.
Meow. We opened. Oh,
sorry. I can't go.
We opened. Just stop it! Stop it! God, can't take you anywhere. Fuck.
That's actually a ringtone on my phone.
I'm waiting for it to go off again.
I'm going to stop.
We opened up this podcast with Motorhead.
God. All right, that's enough.
We opened up with this podcast with Motorhead. You're almost as bad as Glass with the Drake soundboard. Yeah. Lemmy passed. Dude, trying to have a somber moment here.
I'm sorry, Lemmy.
Somber moment.
Don't give me toys to play with. Sorry.
It's your own phone.
Yes, I was very sad to see that that Lemmy had... because he had just been diagnosed with cancer like 2 days before he passed away. It was very aggressive.
Yeah, diagnosed on the 26th, passed away on the 28th. Are you a Motorhead fan or no?
Yeah, totally.
So I will admit this. I've heard their music in passing. I'm not like, fuck yeah, Motorhead. I mean, I'll be like, fuck yeah, Motorhead. But, you know, I've never gone out of my way to be like, yeah, I'm going to turn on Motorhead right now. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, for me, you know, as far as metal goes, especially early metal, definitely Motorhead over like Judas Priest or something like that. I don't know, for me, I was always more of a, it was a little bit more of that, it was almost rootsy metal. In some respects, but yeah, big fan.
I will say I'm the same way. If I had to choose between a lot of other bands and Motorhead, I would always go, like, I would actually rather listen to Motorhead than Black Sabbath or Motorhead over, as you mentioned, Judas Priest or a lot of those early, you know, late 70s, early 80s metal bands. I would rather listen to them. No, fuck that. I'd rather listen to Slayer.
I know. I was trying to channel Brian Posehn, but it really didn't come out right at all. I just sound like I
did you
had
see,
a small stroke.
Brian Posehn's a cappella version of Carol of the Bells?
No.
It's him, like, you know those, like, mashup things where people will voice, like, record themselves doing the different a cappella parts and then, like, put them all together?
Yeah.
It's Brian Posehn doing that for Carol of the Bells. And it's just as dry and just as deadpan and just as, like, stark as you can imagine. It's fucking great. All right. But no, let me. Catching up on all my Motorhead now, I realized that I've been missing out over years. Like I said, It's not like I hated Motorhead. I knew Motorhead. I liked Motorhead. I liked the songs I heard, but I never actually actively went out of my way to check out more Motorhead than what I did.
Yeah. So. And I really, I've always liked Ace of Spades because, you know, that's the iconic song. And literally, I feel almost bad about it because I've not heard any commentary on Motorhead whatsoever or on the passing of Lemmy without somebody either referencing Ace of Spades or playing it in the background when they're talking about it. So, like, it's the most cliche thing to do.
And we did it.
But, I mean, again, that's the most identifiable song that Motorhead has, and that's kind of what Lemmy's known for. So, in the grand scheme of things, meh, we're average. But I mean, that's not to take away from... I mean, they weren't a one-hit wonder.
No, they were not. The other thing I will say is everyone seems to be quoting the same thing, Born to Lose, Live to Win. So that's the passing thing, passing idea that's going with Lemmy. I will say this, though. For a self-admitted, like I said, I'm not like a hardcore fan, but I enjoyed them very much and I'm catching up on my Motorhead history. I have done the Lemmy beard before. On my own face.
I didn't know that.
I can actually post this to the blog. But I have done the Lemmy. I'll send you a picture right now, John.
Hang on. Motorhead had a new album in 2015.
Yeah, it came out like a couple months ago.
Really?
I want to say it came out like September.
See, that went under my radar. Yeah. See, here we've given all the examples. So we're doing a year-end wrap up, our favorite songs that were released in 2015. And I'm so far, I haven't heard Adele, haven't heard The Weeknd, and I didn't know Motorhead had a new album. So I'm basically disqualifying myself from having any opinions.
You could still have opinions. People will just mock you, make fun of you because they're not well-informed opinions.
Well, hey, if you have a problem, you can email me. My address is staticanddistortion@gmail.com. Put the name John in the subject line. I'll read it in 6 months.
Like I said, I'm going to send you the picture so you can laugh at it and we can post it on the blog later. I go to Facebook and one of the first pictures that comes up is a picture of you wearing a rain poncho, giving me finger guns and like a sexy face. on my own photo speech.
Is that from the 312 block party?
Yeah, where Dave and Margie are like blurry in the side.
And I'm wearing a rain poncho. It wasn't even raining anymore, was it? We were just wearing it for the hell of it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that was during the Breeders show.
I just sent it to... Yeah, I'll send it to you, actually. I put it in the wrong chat. Yeah, that was during the Breeders show. Other news, we're severely lacking in music news today. It was kind of a haphazard thrown together. Do you want to talk about the announcements or shall I?
Go ahead, Robert.
Coop and I are the festival people, and around this time of the year is when all the rumors and all the
innuendos
and the guesses and everything like that comes out. But it's officially confirmed at this point, all but a confirmed. For me particularly, for Bonnaroo, Pearl Jam is going to be playing, and that's not as big deal to me as it is to other people. But the two big deals, the two monstrous, giant, flashing, neon bright lights, Guns N' Roses is reuniting. And not only are they reuniting to play Coachella, but they're planning on doing a 25-date stadium tour afterwards.
Pretty sweet.
If you say so. Do I need to see a reunited Guns N' Roses? I do not.
I do.
Do you really?
Dude, Appetite for Destruction is one of my favorite albums.
Yeah.
It's a great album.
I'm not denying how good the album is. I just don't know. I don't know how well they can perform it at this time. Like, Slash will still be Slash. Duff McKagan, no one has heard from, really.
Since Velvet Revolver.
Yeah. And then Axl looked like he gained the weight equivalent of one Duff McKagan.
He did.
So I don't know what he's doing right now.
Funny,
but
he's
no longer the slanky serpentine god that he once was.
He's kind of Jabba the Hutt.
Yes. Slash has been holding it down. Slash has been doing his own thing. He has not lost a step.
Slash has looked exactly the same since 1985.
Top hat, no shirt, cigarette. And the whole package. Axel looks worse for wear.
Axel looks like a different dude.
Yeah.
And then, it's funny you mentioned them. That they'll be...
I totally lost you.
Last night or two nights ago, whenever it was, when Lemmy died. Hello.
Yeah.
Robert.
Yeah, I got
Robert.
You.
Yeah. Okay. Anywho, it would be funny if I actually am still recording and, you know, I sound like an idiot for five seconds.
Do.
But that
we're recording. You sound like an idiot.
Yeah. Oh, I do normally, but so anyways, I was saying when I was going on YouTube and looking at you know, Lemmy doing Ace of Spades the other night, and there's one clip on YouTube and it's Slash playing guitar riff and Dave Grohl doing the drums.
I watched it as well.
Yeah.
And Dave Grohl's like fucking Animal from the Muppets. And Slash is just like his stoic Slash self where you can't see his face. And then Lemmy is just going all out. And it's great.
That was badass. That was really cool.
So, the other news, I mean, they're going to sell out every single date. And everyone's going to flock to it. And you could tell Coachella's going to be their testing ground. That's going to be where they really, you know, hone their chops before they take it on tour, because Coachella will make or break them, because Outkast reunited there and that first show was absolutely horrible for Outkast, and then they tightened up, they got better for the second weekend, and then they took that shit on tour. It's going to be the same for Guns N' Roses. I'm expecting a lot worse. I really am. I don't know if you're still there or not, but the other news, more importantly, and I think this is not bigger, but in my opinion, it means a bit more personally to me. LCD Sound System is getting back together, and they are also playing Coachella, and they are also playing Bonnaroo, supposedly.
And they also released a new song on Christmas Eve or the day before Christmas.
Fantastic.
Oh my gosh. Christmas will break your heart.
It is amazing. And encapsulating of everything that the holidays means to people. Oh, it's so good.
And I love James Murphy's talk about it. He's like, yeah, you know, I've been singing this song in my head every year for 8 years, and I always think of it too late to release it as a Christmas single, and just had some time where, you know, everybody was not doing anything. They could come out, we could record it, and, you know, it's kind of just do it for once. And I mean, that's the catalyst. This, the saddest Christmas song ever, is the catalyst for hopefully bringing the band back for, you know, a while.
I'm totally late to the LCD Sound System party. And Coop even made fun of me for this, because I was like, wow, I really like this LCD Sound System album. And Coop's like, oh, welcome to 2009, Rob. And
yeah.
I'm like, oh, thanks for invited me, I guess. But now that I'm like firmly on the bandwagon, I'm totally looking forward to that LCD Sound System reunion way more than Guns N' Roses. And I know people are going to be like, blasphemy. I don't give a goddamn whatever you think. So,
well, I didn't get into LCD Sound System until 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It was 2013.
Yeah.
So, and it was because of Tom Hutch, who has actually filled in and co-hosted on the show a couple times back in the day. We had this party at my house. Wife and kids were out of town, and I just had a dude barbecue at my house with all of our friends from work. And you know, it was getting late in the night, and everybody had some drinks, and we decided to move the party off my deck and into the living room. And Chris Park fell asleep on the couch while we were mid conversation, and you know, it was kind of one of those nights. But me and Hutch were kind of wired and talking and playing music singing along to Toto's Africa in my living room. And then Hutch pulls up LCD Sound System's All My Friends and goes on one of these, you know, Tom Hutch soliloquies about how he liked this song playing, you know, upon his death, as he's passing away, and with his life flashing before his eyes, almost like the last episode of Six Feet Under, where they're going into the future and showing all the ways they're, you know, reliving their life and everything. And I'm like listening to that, kind of drunk, going, "This is a catchy tune. I dig this."
Should we put on a little bit of All My Friends from LC Sound System?
Yeah, throw it on, dude.
All right. This is All My Friends, excuse me. Sound of Silver is the name of the album, LCD Sound System. As you can tell, I've been drinking.
And this is, me too. And this is one of my 5-year-old daughter's favorite songs. She asks for the song several times a month when we're in the car. So,
all right, here we go.
Yeah.
There's also a documentary on their final shows that they've sold out Madison Square Garden called Shut Up and Play the Hits, and it's a great watch, and I highly recommend people go check it out.
Where do you find that?
It's actually on Amazon Prime, if I remember correctly, and it might even be on Netflix.
No way. I have both of those things.
Let me check Netflix. I know for a fact it's on Amazon Prime. But it might also be on Netflix. But that's all the music news we really have. Not because we just suck. There's so many other things we could probably like, hey, this is 2015 and music review. This band got back together and this person passed away and blah, blah, blah. We have none of that. We're horrible. I think we lost John. Hey, sorry about that, folks. We had technical difficulties. On a 2-person show, if the people can't hear each other, a podcast can't happen.
It's a shitty show.
It just can't happen. So when you sound like you're part of the underwater level in Mario, might as well just play a Mario song, which is what you just heard. So sorry about that. We talked about music news, and we're all past that. So
let's get to the main event.
We're diving in. We're getting into this. You rank your lists.
I rank my list. Yes. I have a top 10. Well, actually, I have a top 13 right now. the top 10 is the top 10, though. So what I do, now I broke my own rule this year. So usually starting on December 21st every year on Facebook, I reveal one song every day until New Year's Eve, which is number one. Mm-hmm. So I start with 10. This year, it's just been crazy, and I got lazy, and Christmas happened, and the in-laws were here, and all this stuff. So I didn't start on time, but so I doubled them up. So on December 26th, I did 10 and 9, 27th, 8 and 7, etc. So now I'm down to number 2, which I'm going to post later tonight. And then number 1 is tomorrow. But then on New Year's Day, after my top 10 has been posted on Facebook, I do, throughout the day, I pepper, some almost made it, my honorable mentions. Yeah. So where do you want to start?
Just quick, I want to go ahead and say this. I don't number my list. Here's the thing. I have a clear favorite. Every year I always have a clear favorite. I never number them though, because I just don't. That's just not my style. So we can start at year 10 and we can work down to year 1 and I can just pepper my in afterwards.
I think we alternated last year.
We did, yeah.
Don't you love doing show prep in the middle of the show?
Fuck yeah. Production value. Okay. Do you want to go first?
Yeah. So my number 10 was I mentioned this in my Facebook post, and I'll summarize this on the blog too later. So as Robert mentioned earlier, you can listen to all the songs on our blog, staticanddistortion.wordpress.com. We're going to post our whole complete list, because my complete list of favorites from 2015 playlist on Spotify has like 60 songs in it. And then I whittle down the ones that I know are my favorite, and then I rank them. So this band, though, is a band I used to really like when they first came out in around 2006, 2007, Silver Sun Pickups. And they had that song, Lazy Eye.
Yeah.
Love that song. Still love that song. And then their second album came out, and it was really heavy, and it was, you know, with Panic Switch and that whole album. I love that one too. Then I kind of forgot that they existed for a while. And then I revisited them maybe two or three years ago, and their album was really synthesizery and weird, and it didn't grab me at all. They had a new album out this year, and the song from it, Circadian Rhythm, Last Dance, I heard it, and I'm like, this is pretty solid. I mean, it's not as heavy as some of their older stuff, but just well-written, well-performed. They had the male-female lead singer trading off, verse and chorus and whatnot, so which I always love. I'm a total sucker for the male-female co-lead singers, like bands like Stars or Mates of State or some of those types of things. So Postal Service, there you go. So that's my number 10.
I've never been a Silver Sun Pickups fan. I like Lazy Eye, but that's about it. So when this album came out, I kind of gave it a cursory play 30 songs from each track to see if something grabbed me. It didn't really just sit with me. I don't know. There's just something about them I've never been able to get down with. So,
well, and like with this song, at first it kind of was like, oh, that wasn't bad. And then it just grew on me. Because what I do is when I like a song, even if it's just a first impression, I throw it on my playlist.
Yeah.
And then some songs cycle off the playlist mid-year. I'm like, yeah, screw this. I'm taking it off. I can't think of any that I did that to this year. But yeah, some songs don't make the cut by the end of the year. Because if I notice I'm skipping them all the time. Because what I do is I throw it in my Spotify playlist, and then at work I just hit that thing on shuffle all the time, and whatnot. And as that one kept coming up, my interest in it grew, and it really grew on me in the last couple months. So I was kind of surprised, because I do this sort of objectively. I threw in the ones that I knew were definitely top tier songs into a spreadsheet. I literally throw this into a spreadsheet, and I just move the tiles around until I'm like, well, this one's better than this one, but this one's better than that one, but that one's a little bit less good than this one. And so I get out there, and then I look at my list, and I'm like, Silver Sun Pickups is number 10? It's kind of surprising, but I looked at what else was around it on my list, and I'm like, yeah,
I agree with this. This is good.
Because these are my favorites. They're not necessarily the best. So let's clarify that too. Yeah. So I don't want to hear, when you email me to staticanddistortion@gmail.com, subject line John, I don't want to hear,
well, they suck.
Why did you put on Silver Sun Pickups?
Yeah, they're my favorite band. I don't care if you like them or not, listener.
I will say this, kind of rolling off what you said. I also, as I mentioned in the beginning, I make a playlist starting at the beginning of the year, and I throw albums on there. So most of the albums I'm going to reference are kind of in chronological order of when I put them on there. Secondly, I actually have, John made fun of me for a bit, I actually have a top 13. let me rephrase that. I have a top 8 and then a top 13, because there's 5 albums that I'm still, like, even as we speak right now, I'm throwing them around in my head, because I'm still not 100% sure on them. And then to even go even further, what you said at the very end, it's not the best of the year, it's my favorite. If I'm going to introduce that, we're going to get a comedy album on my list.
Well, and that's true. If I weren't looking at this objectively, if I was looking at it as far as bands I liked and think should be in my top 10 versus what I actually enjoyed objectively as one can be about their own choices, Wilco would be in my top 10. Yeah. They're not even in my top 15.
Yeah.
So that's a good point. So on to your
I said, it's going to be kind of a chronological list, I guess, either of when I first heard it or first listened to it and threw it on there, because I'll throw an album on there and then pull it off. No album has ever made it back on, interestingly enough. So
I only had that happen once on my list. Last year, Autumn Defense got kicked off the list, but I added them back later because I missed them.
Yeah. First one I'm going with here, Sleater-Kinney, your favorite girl band. No Cities to Love. This album from start to finish is fucking fantastic.
It is.
It is such a good album. It is everything that you wanted from everything that was born from Sleater-Kinney in the 90s and that Riot Girl movement coming back much fiercer, much stronger, and then seemingly.
But better.
Much more mature and yes. Much more assertive. And it's so great. And to see the band get out there after such a long hiatus, and it doesn't even look like they've rusted. It doesn't look like there's any cobwebs. They just come out there swinging so hard and so furiously. It's so good. It's such a great album.
And like for me, so I am trying to assemble an albums list too. I don't have, I think I have like six on my albums list, but that, so it's weird because that album is on my favorite albums list, but none of their songs are in my top 10.
But see, yeah, you can have a song that stands out and the rest of the album you're like, but that's why they have the singles list,
right?
You know, Billboard Hot 100 or whatever it might be. But then you can have an album that you listen to from start to beginning or from start to finish, excuse me. And you're like, wow, this is really, really impactful. But I could not pick out one single song that is better than the other.
Right. I agree. So I'm 100% with you on this pick. I support it fully.
Such a great album. And on top of that, I saw them live and they are phenomenal live. Like I said, it doesn't look like they've rusted at all. Doesn't look like they're not a stale act. They're not a Guns N' Roses that are coming back to try to cash it in.
There's no legacy aspect to this. No, they're just coming whatsoever. Out to play the hits and collect some money and then go back to obscurity for a while. Yeah,
they came out with something to say and something not necessarily to prove, but just to show like, yeah, we still have this and we're not fucking around. This is what we're doing and we're doing it really, really well. It's so good. So
yeah, Sleater-Kinney. Totally agree. So my number 9 on my songs list, Odyssey's That's Love off of the new album. I think it's called The Good Fight or something like that. Odyssey is fast becoming one of my favorite rappers.
Yeah.
Almost.
He's really good. Really good dude.
I mean, really good, really smart, really quick-witted as well. And just... my mind just goes in so many directions when I listen to his rhymes, and he's almost to the point where he's neck and neck with Mos Def for my favorite
really
MC. Yeah, it really grown on me, and that's another one that, you know, I've only been turned on to him for 3-4 years now, but he's pretty prolific too. He's had like 3 albums in that time, so and one was an instrumental hip hop album. So, I mean, the what I like about the song, and this is what I wrote on my Facebook post about it. I said, this is a great song that describes real love, not romantic or sentimental love, but actual love. Like, it's not, you know, framing it in some, like, you know, longing for a love or, you know, missing somebody from the past that you wish you'd stayed with or whatever. Literally lists examples of how a person has shown love to him, and then the song's called That's Love. It's got this really warm horn section, whatever the sample that they used for that, and it's really good. Check it out. The whole album's awesome though too.
I'm actually typing it in because I've heard it, but I want to go ahead and add it to a playlist to recheck it out here.
You want to play a little bit of it?
We can if you want. I'll just throw it right in the middle. This is That's Love by Odyssey off of the album The Good Fight. Mm-hmm.
told me the truth even if it really hurt, cause you knew what I was worth. When you let me borrow money that you didn't really have, cause you knew what I was worth. That's love. When I was at my worst, you would tell me I would blow when I thought that I would burst. You told me how to help others, and through that discovered how to put myself first. And here we are again, just confronting fears. Whether pain or gain is a bunch of tears. Blood, sweats, and tears probably disappear when smoke starts to clear, their resistance near. Pay attention to the folks who are fan of the flames. They're the ones who matter most in the gravity game. When stakes weigh you down and they stay around to pick up pieces and you off the ground. That's love.
Not only is it a great song, but he has a great just actual natural voice that makes you want to listen to him. So
yeah, exactly. I dig it a lot.
Quick sidestep here. You mentioned that they have a great horn sample, which we kind of heard a little snippet of at the end of that song. I've been getting into this YouTube series called Rhythm Roulette. Have you ever heard of this?
Not at all.
It's from I'm pretty sure it's a magazine called Mass Appeal. And what they do is they just reach out to multiple producers, and they'll take them to their local neighborhood record shop, and they'll blindfold them, and then they just let them loose, and they have to blindfold, randomly pick three albums, and then they take them, they put them in a bag, they take them back to their studio, and that's when they take them out, and they're like, this is the three albums you picked at random, make a beat.
Wow.
And then they test them right then and there live.
What's this called?
It's called Rhythm Roulette. And some of them come out really, really shitty because you can tell either the people are really stoned or, you know, they're just not that good of a producer. They really need to step their game up. And other people take, like, there was one, I wish I remember the it was a female producer. I can't remember if it was the only female producer on there. And she got a classical album. And she's checking through it, and she hears this organ section, and she's like, damn, music is music, and that's great. And she made this fantastic beat off of this classical organ, like, little lick. And it's really, really good. Whereas you have other people that you're like, wow, you're a really well-known producer. That's a shit beat. Step your game up.
So I want to check that out.
Rhythm Roulette. It's really, really good. Second on the chronological list of Robert here, Natalie Press. Are you familiar with Natalie Press?
I'm only vaguely familiar with Natalie Press.
Probably because I've mentioned her before.
Well, and I think, didn't she do something with Ryan Adams at one point or something?
I think she did.
Yeah. And then Ryan Adams, like, covered for her. Yes. And he came out in a dress and played her song.
Natalie Press was opening for Ryan Adams on tour in Europe.
Yeah.
And she missed a flight or a bus or something like that. So he dressed as her and played her songs.
To open for himself.
Right.
Yeah.
Singer-songwriter off of the Sound Bomb record label, which is headed by Matthew E. White, who has also been on my list in the past.
You got me turned on to him a couple years ago.
Matthew E. White is great. And Matthew E. White put Natalie Press on, and Natalie Press is just as great. She has this very soft, ivory-like, dainty, porcelain voice to her. But there's a lot of, like, emotion and pain and hurt behind it. And the orchestrations and the arrangements are very lush and very beautiful. Almost John Bryan-esque production to it. Great, like, live horn and or string sections and stuff like that. I had never heard of her before. And the main reason I checked her out is because she was going to be playing Pitchfork. And I was like, oh, I'm going to Pitchfork. Let me check her out. Ended up being one of my favorite artists to see there. One of my favorite albums of the year. And it's her debut album. It's only her first album. So I'm expecting monstrous, amazing things from Natalie Press. The name of her album is self-titled Natalie Press. I recommend checking out the song Christy. It's absolutely beautiful.
Cool. I've got that on my list now. Thanks.
I'm waiting for my next pick because you are going to fangirl the hell out.
Okay. Just side note, I'm on Spotify right now, and I'm looking at our friend Dave is showing up in the side feed, and he's listening to Mysterious Ways lullaby renditions of U2 by Rockabye Baby.
I love the Rockabye Baby series.
I do too. Totally. So when my son was born, we got the Rockabye Baby Coldplay. It was okay. And it's pretty darn good. That was back when I still liked Coldplay. Like their it's only the first two albums, I think. It's nothing after that. And then Rockabye Baby Beatles, which is actually, I could listen to that just in general. And then Coop, when we found out we were having our third, got us a Rockabye version of Wilco songs.
Oh, that's cute.
So yeah, so that was pretty cool.
But anyhow, I got my buddy Brad Rockabye Dave Matthews Band, because he's a Dave Matthews fan, and Rockabye Queen and Rockabye Bob Marley. And the Bob Marley one's really, really good.
How do they do We Will Rock You as a lullaby?
I don't know. I don't remember if it's on there.
That'd be funny, though, if it was. Anywho, so I guess, is it my pick again after Rallygrass? Okay. So my number 8 was, and I think this is just a one-off song. I don't think she had a new album out this year, but St. Vincent's Teenage Talk.
Yes, I think it is a one-off song, and St. Vincent is... Okay, first of all, she's amazingly talented.
Yeah.
And it's just brilliant. This is going to be such a weird comment, but she's amazingly sexy and beautiful.
I'm not going to fight you on that. Like, you just watch her in an interview, and of course, she doesn't dress sexy. She's not like... I mean, she does some crazy stuff with her hair sometimes and stuff like that, but she's not, you know, trying to look overtly glamorous in the sense of like a, well, anybody really, but just watching her talk and the, you know, of course she's gorgeous, but watching her talk and watching the wheels moving in her head while she does so is that's what does it for me. I mean, watching her sing, watching her perform, but she's one of those people you look at her, you can look at a photograph of her and know that there's like amazing things going on in her head that would make me feel bad about myself because I pale in comparison.
Yeah, 100%.
And sometimes she doubles as a waitress at her sister's taco bar or whatever it is. But so the Teenage Talk song, though, it was just a reaction. So for me, it almost... I kind of have a love-hate with St. Vincent, though, because some of her music just doesn't hit me. Some of it really does, though. So I go back and forth. But and this is one that just the tones of the music, the notes of the keyboard, the melody of the song, the lyrics, everything is one of those ones that just everything's right. Everything's perfect.
Yeah.
And it speaks to me. But I've said before privately, though, that my favorite songs of St. Vincent are the ones that remind me of Tori Amos.
Okay.
And I think this is maybe one of those.
Yeah.
Okay. And but this song, though, I dig it so much. I said it's lyrically, it's full of nostalgia and reminiscence that anyone who's ever been a teenager before can relate to. But in the end, she turns it on its head. The lyric says, you know, but that's just teenage talk. I don't think the past is better just because it's cased in glass, protecting us from our now and later. Like, it was like, I just told a cool story that I enjoyed telling, but, you know, I'm not being nostalgic about it.
I think at one point you mentioned that it appeals to you. Actually, the funny story I have about St. Vincent, I was at a music festival and it was like 11:30 at night. And I'm sitting at a random table in between all these different stages, and I can hear, like, you know, hip hop going off on this stage and some loud bass going off on this stage and some really loud rock band going off on the other stage. And I'm just sitting there by myself, just kind of taking the whole scene in. And these two gentlemen come and sit. They're like, is anybody sitting here? I'm like, no, I'm good. And they sit there and they take out certain plant material and they start putting it into a certain white paper and they're sitting there creating a thing and
rolling a joint. That's what you're talking about,
rolling
right?
A joint, essentially.
Okay.
And I get
just
talking
so we're
with
clear
them, and I'm like, so, you know, who are you guys checking out? And they're like, oh, we just came from so-and-so hip-hop performance. I can't remember the schedule. I can't remember what was going on. We came from this hip hop performance, and oh yeah, later on, you know, Skrillex is going on at like 1:30 in the morning, and blah 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 blah. And I'm like, oh, so who you gonna go check out now? They're like, Saint Funkin' Vincent, and I'm like, whoa, what? And they're like, hell yeah, dude, she's sexy as fuck, and you roll up a joint and light that, and you just lay back and relax. And I'm like, Saint Vincent speaks to people.
Yes.
Like, these two dudes were just like really, really hard, and they're just like, we just want to rage and party, but we have emotional sides.
Well, and that's just it. And like I said, not all of her songs speak to me that way, but you know, when they do, it's so well done, and it's great. So, all right, your turn.
Third album.
Now I'd like to pass the mic to Rob.
For my third album, I have your boyfriend.
Who?
Father John Misty.
Yeah!
I love you, Honey Bear.
That's a great
album. I
think
he wrote that album for you, didn't he?
I think I'm his Honey Bear, yes.
I remember you were completely, like, squee with emotion when we saw him at Lollapalooza.
Totally.
You're just like, oh my god, it's Father John Misty.
Forgive me, Father, I have sinned.
Anyway, the caustic wonder that is Josh Tillman. I loved Fear Fun. His first album was on my top 10 of that year. And I remember seeing him, and that album is just so, it's just so machismo and bravado and swagger, all rolled up into a folk rock act.
Well, and without taking itself too seriously.
Oh, no, not at all. Like, totally tongue-in-cheek, totally in on the joke, but making fun of you at the same time for not being in on the joke. There's just so many different ways to describe him. And he elevates that art form on his second album while making it much more introspective and much more, like, with a scalpel. Just cuts directly to his inner self and kind of just flays himself open and skins himself alive on this album, all while look at you and saying, are you happy now? You know, like, just I'm here and you don't appreciate it kind of thing. I don't know. There's just so many ways to describe Josh Tillman's delivery and lyrics and songwriting. It's just such a great album. So
it really is. And I'll talk about that more because he's up further on my list on this, on my top 10 songs. Okay. Well, I'll skip ahead.
No. When you get there, we'll get there.
We'll do it in order then. Okay. So let's just go to my number 7 then. Number 7, Mac DeMarco's Another One.
He is such a great guy. He seems like the kind of guy that you'd be like, hey, you want to go get a beer? Yeah, let's go.
Want to come to my house for tea? My address is in my liner notes.
Oh yeah. Come on over for tea. We'll have some Tim Hortons and we'll have some tea.
Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
It's a Canadian thing. He's Canadian, so.
Yeah. So what I like about this song is, for one, it's kind of complex. I mean, he's such a simple dude. He so dresses simply. He plays music simply. Even if it's complex music, he's playing it simply. It makes it sound effortless. But this song, I feel like his style is evolving finally, because 2 was one of my favorite albums when that came out. But then when Salad Days came out, I was just like, oh, that's cool, but it sounds just like the last album, you know? And then I feel like on this EP, this Another One EP that he put out, his sound's evolving a little bit. It's gelling, and it's at the top of its game right now. But lyrically, and I'm a big lyrics guy, I've said that before on the show, but I said only Mac DeMarco could take a song about fear, paranoia, and jealousy and make it sound so simple and so mellow.
Yeah.
Like, and that, I mean, really, that's what it is. But you know that he's just one of those guys that he's like, well, I'm kind of worried about this, but I kind of shrug and go on with my life. But now I'm kind of worried about it again. And now I, you know, like, but let's not worry about it, you know. And that's all I got to say about that.
Mac DeMarco, he's the everyman relatable artist.
Yeah.
He's not Bruce Springsteen in the sense that he doesn't make these power anthems, but he's Bruce Springsteen in the sense that everyone can be like, yeah, I know that guy. I go get coffee with him. Right. I know that guy. We go. He's that everyman. He's that relatable blue collar guy that when he comes to the bar and he opens up and he's like, yeah, my girlfriend, you know, she and I are on the outs and I had sex with another woman and I'm cheating on her and she found out and I just don't know what to do because now I realize I loved her. You look back at your life and you're like, damn, I should really tell the people I love that I love them more often. And you're like, it's just a normal guy, you know, that you end up like dropping little nuggets of wisdom at the bar. I guess that's the way I look at Mac DeMarco.
That's fair.
So, but at the same time, he's also put his own thumb up his butt at a show,
which is unfortunate for everybody.
If you ever get a chance, watch the. Have I ever told you about Nardwar?
Yes.
Go watch the Nardwar Mac DeMarco interview. It's really good, really informative. My next pick. We're just going to go ahead and get this over the with. It's the next on my list, but it's number one on everyone's list. It's Kendrick Lamar. Did you like this album, To Pimp a Butterfly?
Initially, no.
But?
And Dave tried to murder me once because of that.
I yelled at Chanel because of it.
With his mind, not with, you know, weapons or anything. But I was driving him home. I picked him up from work one day because he needed a ride. We were talking about it. He's like, John, are you serious? Have you listened to it? The whole thing? Like, yeah, Dave tried to shame me into liking it. And I was just like, I'm sorry, dude. I appreciate its awesomeness, but it just doesn't do anything for me. And then he's like, seriously, go back tonight, listen to How Much a Dollar Costs, and tell me you don't like that song. Because I was picking him up the next day. Yeah. And next day I was like, okay, dude, you were right. No, it is a great album, actually.
Chanel and I had the argument about this early. This came out, like, I think March, if I remember correctly.
It was early in the year, first half of the year, for sure.
And at around the same time, J. Cole had his album Forest Hill Drive come out at roughly at the same time, or maybe a little bit before, and everyone was on J. Cole. He had been, you know, I think went gold with this album, selling out arenas all around, everything like that. And then Kendrick Lamar's album came out, and I listened to J. Cole's, and I'm like, oh, this is good. I listened to Kendrick, and I'm like, this dude has a story to tell. Conceptually, this album from start to finish is nearly flawless.
I was actually going to use the word flawless, yeah.
Beat selection, and then those cuts in of him expanding and extrapolating on the story that eventually he gets to the final track and he tells this whole poem of pimping a butterfly, and you realize he's been talking with these old found tapes and recordings of Tupac Shakur, and he asks him this final question at which Tupac never answers, and he's left hanging looking for this guidance that he will never ever get. And the whole thing about the rise and the fall and the rise of a young man, you know, who's succeeding and wants to put everyone on but struggling to come to terms with his own weight of his success. I mean, I can go on. There's essays upon essays upon essays and, you know, reviews and blogs. And it's literally number one, I believe, on every top 50, top 10, top 25 list I've read. This is the number one album. That being said,
Barack Obama even referenced this as being his favorite, How Much a Dollar Costs being his favorite song of the year, which we reported on last week on Static and Distortion.
That being said, are there more listenable albums that came out this year? You bet your ass. This is not, I'm going to go, to put it in terms of food, this is not, oh, let's go to Taco Bell and get some burritos and we're going to sit and have a laugh and have a good time and joke around. This is, I'm going to go to like French Laundry, or I'm going to go to like a 5-star Michelin rated, you know, I'm going to go to that place, you know, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. I'm going to go have sushi there. And the dude takes you on a journey through his art form from start to finish that you need to think about in order to fully understand what's going on. So,
well, I was going to say, so I was a fan of Good Kid, Mad City, but I did not see this album coming.
Yeah, no one did.
Yeah, I didn't know that that was the next level he was. And he didn't kick it up an extra level. He kicked it up like 15 levels. You know, not that his he was a slouch on his first album at all. I mean, that was a great album. But I did not see this album coming from him.
But it's actually quite brilliant the way he did it, because Good Kid, Mad City also has fantastic storytelling. He's a naturally sure. gifted, you know, lyricist.
And that's but what then, I love about it, because, like I said, I'm a lyrics guy. So,
but then going from, like, once again, what many consider to be one of the best albums of that year to the best album. And like I said, I don't rank my albums, but this is my number one. To what is considered the best album of this year, he now can do anything he wants. And he people can, will give him all sorts of leeway.
He can feature on Taylor Swift remixes.
Which he's done. Yes. He can go out there and make probably an EDM album. And people will be like, you know, he's just coming off of this really heady album. He needs to let loose. He can go out there and make trap music. And people will be like, he's just trying to embrace his culture or whatever it might be. Whatever the fuck it is. He could do anything he wants because he's coming off of this that speaks to such volumes that people will be talking about it for years to come.
I agree.
It's going to be a landmark album.
No fucking sleeping.
Sorry, I've had a long day. I was working up until the minute we recorded. So, anywho.
We are approaching an hour. Maybe we should start
tightening this up a bit.
Yeah.
Which is funny because we're wasting all of our time on like the number 10. Well, for me, I rank mine. You don't. But yeah. All right. So, number 6, Courtney Barnett, Depreston.
That's a great album.
It's a great album, but that's my favorite song on it. And what hooked me was the little refrain in the guitar in between the verses.
Yeah.
And then that really mellow kind of solo in the middle, too. But the lyrics are just, she has this way of writing with such simplicity in her storytelling. And she tells really mundane stories. So contrast that with Kendrick Lamar, who paints this beautiful picture. Courtney Barnett sounds like you're just having a conversation, you know, while you're, you know, cooking dinner or something, you know, talking about what happened that day, to the point where sometimes it's awkward. But underneath it is, I mean, this is a song about house hunting in the suburbs. And you know,
it's very mundane.
Yeah, but when you really listen to not just the lyrics, which are just talking about, you know, the hardwood floors and the canisters on the kitchen counter, and, you know, well, I guess we don't need to live in the city next to the coffee shops because I got this really great percolator now, so we can save all that money on coffee and move to the suburbs. You know, like these really practical, simple concepts, but when you put it all together and listen to the emotion in it, this could be a metaphor for a relationship. You know, something's wrong, let's move it out. And then there's the line in the song, you know, if you've got a spare $500,000, you could knock it down and start rebuilding. Like, there's just so much, there's, you know, metaphor for change, there's metaphors for loss, there's metaphors for relationships, and just built into this really simplistic song, my mind can go 100 directions with it. And that's what really impressed me about that song, and just her songwriting in general. This is just a good example of it.
Yeah, this is because you and Brian that we worked with both love her. I should say, she's not the most groundbreaking guitarist, musically speaking, but I think she shines through on her actual songwriting and how she ties that in. She just kind of uses the music to elevate it to the next level, but her lyrics is where she really does come through.
Yeah.
So
word.
All right. In interest of speeding that up, I'm going to go ahead and throw out the next one. It should be no shock. I have Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment, Surf, which is basically Chance the Rapper and his buddies. Really, Donnie Trumpet and his buddies, including Chance the Rapper, just putting together kind of like a compilation album featuring all their friends, all their family, all the people they want to put on from start to finish. It is a feel-good album. Donnie Trumpet being the main producer behind this. He's a trumpet player, production, handles the arrangements, handles everything on this. If I had to put tracks, if I was doing a top 10 songs, Sunday Candy from this album would probably be in my top five. I've played that song so many times. It really is just a feel-good album from start to finish. Very positive, great vibes. If you haven't heard of Chance the Rapper, you please do everyone a favor and go check out Chance the Rapper. But mainly go check out this album, Donnie Trumpet and the Social Experiment. The name of the album is called Surf.
I have nothing to add to that because I've not heard any of it.
Dude, check it out. If you like hip-hop and you like great arrangements and great music, definitely check it out.
That's right up my alley.
There you go.
So my number five, Father John Misty, True Affection. I've already geeked out about him, so I'll keep it short. But this song appealed to me because actually it was the bass line that got me.
Okay.
Initially. I mean, it's kind of an odd song for his normal style because it's got this 808 style, you know, track to it. And a lot of, you know, glitchy computers and whatnot. But that's the point, because it's a song about, you know, wanting to connect with somebody organically, not through electronics. And I mean, the 95% of my friendship with Robert is via Facebook Messenger, you know, and you know, all that kind of stuff. But I just love, and it's just the way he has a way with words to turn that into, you know, let me show you true affection. You know, and of course, that was the song we walked in on when we saw him at Pitchfork. When Dave and I came in, I was just like, oh, but it was the bass line. It's the concept. I mean, that album, we could talk about that album all day, you know, Chateau Lobby or, you know, Born in the USA, any of those songs stack up. But this one was my favorite off the album, and it's my number five for the year. So surprisingly, the album I geeked out about for, you know, 6 months this year only made it to number five on my top 10 favorite song list.
Like we said, you couldn't pick out a single song that stands out more than the other ones because the whole album speaks.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chateau Lobby was close, though. That one was close to beating out True Affection.
Next on my list, Jamie XX. Electronic British house album.
One of the members. Spent more time on this one. I haven't listened to it, but go on.
This is my number two on my list. If I had to rank them, this is definitely number two. He's a member of the XX. He does a lot of their production behind the scenes and everything like that. Kind of branched out on his own. It's like minimalistic house music at its best. And I never thought I would say, wow, Robert, I like a house album in 2015, but I do. From the moment the first track kicks in, Gosh, all the way to the end, it's absolutely fantastic. The big single off of this is featuring Young Thug and Popkin. I know there's going to be good times. Like I said, in the interest of time, I'm trying to speed along here. Absolutely fantastic. If I have to pick a couple albums from this that you must check out, Surf, Kendrick Lamar, and Jamie XX, In Color.
Word. To your mother. What am I on? Number four?
Number four.
On my list is Alibi, which is...
Yes.
Matt Berninger from The National and Brent Knopf of Menomina.
We've talked about them, you and I, offline.
Well, I've talked about them on the podcast before during the What You've Been Listening To section. But the songs Return to the Moon, which was the first single off this album. But, I mean, the whole album's great. It's another one that's on my top albums list of the year. But I think it really gives Matt Berninger a place to highlight some of the dark humor that is, I mean, there's a lot of dark humor buried in the National songs that are more somber and anything. There's that, you know, I don't even know how you describe it, but this one's got a little bit more, the humor's in the forefront and the, nervousness and the anxiety that's in a lot of national songs is a little bit more in the background, and it's framed in a more comical way to me. But I mean, musically, holy crap. I'd say it's even head and shoulders above a national album. Musically and production wise, it sounds just phenomenal. It's really, really engineered well. So
I went and checked it out based off of your recommendation, and I couldn't get past the lyrics. I felt they were not heavy-handed, just heavy.
I get that.
I wish he would have backed off, or maybe let the music shine through a bit more. Or I feel like there was this weird discordance between the lyrics and the music themselves. I guess that's the way I could describe it.
See, it made total sense to me.
Yeah.
But I'm a big National fan, though, so I don't know how big of a National fan you are.
I'm not a very big National fan.
Yeah.
This is where things kind of start going off the rails a bit for me. I'll jump ahead. This is the last album to make my list, but
your official list.
My official list, and then things maybe get kind of wishy-washy from here. Kamasi Washington, The Epic. I've talked about this guy on the podcast. I've touted him. Someone recently asked me, I was in California, Robert, what is something that you listened to that absolutely just shook you, that was a surprise out of left field, that you never, you know, that gave you an experience? And this is it. Kamasi Washington, The Epic. It's jazz. And when I say it's jazz, I mean it's dark, brooding, grandiose, operatic, takes you on a psychedelic journey, jazz. He has his own songs in there, Change of the Guard and Isabel and Final Thought, but then he has a couple of classics on there. He actually does Cherokee. He does a version of Clair de Lune. It's out there. And the reason I actually did a little bit more research on it, and the reason I ended up liking it so much, or I think I feel like I connected it with it so much, my number one album last year, when my number two album last year, excuse me, Flying Lotuses, You're Dead, Kamasi Washington, they're on the same label. And he actually does the saxophone playing for Flying Lotus.
No way, and, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know this. And another album that's going to appear on my list in just a few moments, Kamasi Washington does the saxophone for that. And that person did the bass lines for Flying Lotus. So it turns out there's this whole little group of musicians that I am diving in headfirst into and didn't even know they were all related.
I love when that happens.
It's so great.
Yeah. My number three... it couldn't be a top 10 list without a Death Cab song. they had an album out this year. It's been a while since they've been on one of my lists. So, I tried to sneak them on in 2013 because they released the, demo versions of Transatlanticism. And I remember you and I got into an instant message argument over whether it was permissible to make a song technically from 2003 be on your list. I argued that it was released this year. This version was released this year. And you're like, no, screw that. Same band. You can't do that. It was a cover.
We also got in an instant messaging argument. Well, technically, you and my wife had a discussion via me through instant messaging about how she didn't care for them and she felt they were whiny.
Yeah, and I'm like, they're not whiny. You don't know, Randy.
You don't know.
Hi, Randy. in the off chance that she actually listens to our podcasts. So. What?
I don't think she does.
My wife has never listened to a single minute of one of our shows. So
there you go.
Anyways, number three, Death Cab for Cutie's No Room in Frame. I picked that song because, for one, I think it's the most Death Cab-y, classic Death Cab-y of this album. They kind of went in a new musical direction. You know, Chris Walla was leaving the band as they were recording it. Ben had just gone through a breakup. His songwriting's a little bit different on this album. And they had a first time they ever let an outside producer in to have input on one of their albums. And so there's a lot of change in it, and there's a lot of brokenness in it. But this song really frames the album, no pun intended. It's like the mission statement for the album. So it's absolutely directly a song about Ben Gibbard's divorce from Zooey Deschanel. And, you know, the chorus is, was I in your way when the cameras turned to face you? No room in frame for two. And, yeah, I know. I don't know if you've listened to this one, Robert, but, and the melody is just gorgeous in this one. And it's like a sad song, but it's like a conversation that most divorced people never get to, where he's almost like he's definitely talking directly to her. This is a song for Zooey. But he's doing this like, well, I guess I see why things, you know, went sideways, but there's still stuff I don't understand, you know, but there's no bitterness really in it, even though some of the lyrics are really, really brutally honest.
Yeah.
But there's no bitterness to it. There's some form of, you can tell there's still love and respect and compassion for the other person, even though they're like, I don't understand this, but it is what it is. So
it's so weird. Imagine having someone write a song about you and it actually becomes like goes on into an album, gets released, and people internationally listen to it. How would you feel about that?
Well, as a songwriter, there's one song I've written for Chris and I's band Riderless that is very personal, and I have not, you know, I've given Chris a version of it. He's heard it, but we have never developed it into something else because the person who hears it will know exactly who it's about, you know, and I'm not a famous rock star. I can't, you know, hide in plain sight. I don't know if I'll ever develop that any further other than just writing it for myself, but I don't know how people do that.
I want to know who it's about.
I'll tell you after the show.
Okay. All right. Next album. Vince Staples, Summertime 06. Dude from Long Beach, California. Young guy. I think he's only 20, 21. I'm not going to go too much into detail about this other than this is a fresh, new, young voice in hip hop who has a new story to tell. Your classic hip hop, you know, young voice, new story, tells it interesting, like in an interesting manner, everything like that. It's a fantastic album. And while I don't have much to say about it, it's stands out more than other albums that I've listened to the point where, you know, I could just say, hey, it's another hip hop album that you really should go check out. But it's one of those hip hop albums that you should really, really go check out because the kid has something to say and he's doing it very well. But like I said, it's one of those staple hip hop stories where a new guy comes out with a new story, tells it, and then goes on from there. So like I said, won't go too much into it. Check it out for yourself. It's actually very ambitious for a debut album. It's a double disc.
Oh, nice.
Double disc debut album. And it's really, really good.
Well, it's funny because in Pitchfork's The Year in Disappointment, one of the things they were disappointed about on the list was Vince Staples only kind of famous.
Yeah, like dude should be way more famous than what he is. But he so great musician. I also think he puts his foot in his mouth a lot. Because he speaks his mind and he has his own set of opinions and he gets chastised a lot about that. But then if you actually put it into his perspective, like it makes sense coming from him. So one of the big things that he kind of put his foot in his mouth was he said that music from the 80s, hip hop from the 80s and early 90s doesn't mean anything to him.
I remember
and,
that.
And yeah. People are like, well, what about like Biggie? And what, not even that. What about like Run DMC and this person and Biggie and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, I know those people. I understand that they have a contributing factor. But he goes, put it this way. Those people influenced these people. And these people were the people that I was listening to. So through a direct line of lineage, you could say I'm still being influenced by those people. But in a modern sense, to the people that I actually wanted to listen to. So,
which is not,
it makes sense from his mind. He's like, not, I didn't grow up with that.
That's not unreasonable.
He's like, I didn't grow up with that, and I understand that when it released, it was a big deal to you, but when I was alive, and when I was born, and when this music was coming out, that was a big deal to me.
That's fair.
So
I don't hate him for that.
He's a young kid, though. He's still only 20. He has time to grow and learn, and maybe he'll eventually go digging in the crates and find some other old stuff, but for the time being, the story he's telling and the way he's telling and how he goes about it, he's a very unique individual. I highly recommend reading interviews and seeing him on like YouTube videos and stuff like that. Kid's crazy. There you go. Cool.
All right. So we're up to my number two. Mm-hmm. Another band I saw at Lollapalooza, and this was almost my number one song until I remembered the other song that is my number one song. So this is number two. It started out as my number one, 'Cause I'm a Man by Tame Impala.
Oh, okay. Off of Currents.
Yeah. Currents is one of my favorite albums of the year, just in general. But that 'Cause I'm a Man just was something special on that album. It is so honest, but and it was interesting because I remember the first time I heard that song, I'm thinking, this almost sounds like 90s R&B. Like it's like a psychedelic R&B song, you know. It's like well hidden, but it's got this kind of, you know, it could have been, you know, Casey and JoJo kind of doing something, you know, if you just listen to the rhythm and the beat and the song structure and forget like the psychedelic sounding guitar flourishes and whatnot, it really is. And then I read an interview with the dude, I can't remember his name.
Kevin something, I believe.
Kevin Parker, thank you. And he was like, yeah, I was listening to a lot of 90s R&B and hip-hop when I wrote this album, which is, you know, different. So I wanted to incorporate some of those elements. And I'm like, oh.
I got that.
I totally get Kevin Parker. I mean, I've been a fan of theirs since they came out, you know, a couple of years ago. I've got all their albums, thanks to my brother, who's a bigger fan than I am. But that song just struck a chord with me, and I appreciate it for what it is. So
every Tame Impala song I hear, like on the radio or a single, I love. I'm like, oh, this is really, really good. But then for some reason or another, whenever I put their album on, I find myself drifting and not being able to focus or pay attention, which... I don't know why that it's just not holding me. And everything in my, like, people have always said, oh, you'd really like Tame Impala, Robert. It seems like it's really up your alley. I can't get into it. I don't know what it is. It loses me somewhere in translation. So
yeah,
I got to give it another try. 'Cause Current seems like everyone loves it, and it seems like an album that I should love. And I just can't get into it for some reason.
Well, that's how I was about Kendrick Lamar, though, at first. And so it grew on me. But you do you, Robert. You do you.
The ninth album on my list, Thundercat. The name of the album is called The Beyond / Where the Giants Roam. And it only comes in at 16 minutes. It is a 16-minute long album. It only has 6 tracks on it. One track is only 43 seconds. It is about conceptualizing and realizing and accepting death. And that in this great wide world, we are all going to die, and we must come to terms with this, and we can accept it or fight against it in a futile battle that none of us will ever win. And by accepting it, we are able to transcend beyond death and hopefully journey further into our own selves and our own conscious and travel amongst the cosmos. I'm not shitting you. You can get all of this across in 16 minutes because Thundercat is that fucking good.
That's heavy, man.
It is crazy heavy. Now, that being said, there is allusions and there is themes drawn from his first two albums, specifically his last album, Apocalypse. But yeah, it is a very, very heavy album, and upon repeated listenings, you can really get the message he's coming across with it. So it's only 16 minutes long. You can listen to it 4 times in an hour, and hopefully won't melt your brain. So there you go.
Nice. Well, last but not least on my list, coming in at number one.
Coming in at number one.
After 18 weeks on the charts. Sufjan Stevens, No Shade in the Shadow of the Cross.
And funny enough, neither one of us, I don't have Carrie and Lowell on my list. I don't know if Carrie and Lowell's on your list.
Yeah, it is.
It is? Okay.
Mm-hmm. But
yeah.
Yeah, that song, though, is like soul-crushingly intense and soft and beautiful. It's probably the lowest key song that's ever been on one of my top of the list, because it's literally just him. He's sitting in his office or wherever. You can hear the air conditioner running in the background. He totally just recorded it, you know.
I think he did this in hotel rooms.
Yeah, hotel rooms, whatnot. Exactly. Yeah. So, but this song, just the you know, and of course it's Sufjan lyrics, so they kind of go everywhere. But the theme of it is, you know, where you've like lost your way. You know, you've completely hit rock bottom. You've lost your way. You realize you're not the person you used to be, and you know you want to come back to that. And I love the concept of, because of course there's always some religious theme thrown into his stuff to pepper it and make it interesting. But he is a religious person, but you know, no shade in the shadow of the cross. You know, to say like, this is, you know, I can't hide under my religion here. The light's being shown on kind of the way I've been living, and I got to change. And of course, it's just sung so hauntingly. It's I think it was the most compelling song I listened to this year. So that's why it's my number one.
For those interested, we have done both a Sufjan Stevens podcast and a Slater Kitty podcast. You can go check those out.
And a Death Cab for Cutie podcast.
I'm trying to think of anybody else that we covered that we've done podcasts before. And I think that's it. But we've done podcasts for all three of those artists. So you can go to staticanddistortion.wordpress.com to check them out.
Yep. Keyword search.
Search. Yeah, because I don't even use a search. I always get lost on our own website. Final album, The Weeknd, Beauty Behind the Madness. I was very against this album at first. And the weird thing was, I was against this album for one of the stupidest reasons, because I felt that Lollapalooza had put The Weeknd against Paul McCartney. And I was like, why? Why would you do that? The Weeknd is nowhere near as big as Paul McCartney. And he still isn't. No. Fuck you, Lollapalooza. You're dumb. But this album, Beauty Behind the Madness, is actually way better than I gave it credit for. And upon repeated listenings, he's part of this whole new hipster R&B movement, which is being dubbed PBR&B. And it's like The Weeknd and Miguel, and I always mispronounce the guy's name, Jeremiah or whatever it is, and Frank Ocean, and there's someone else I'm missing, and that's kind of wrapped up in this. But these heartfelt dudes who are also, I guess you can count them as like out there, and they're in the club popping bottles, but then they also admit that they miss their moms. I don't know how to describe it, but it's weird. There's a whole movement that's out there that are these dudes who are really, really in touch with their emotions, but they're also gangsters, I guess, is the way to describe it.
So they're like Bone Thugs in Harmony.
They're like the new Bone Thugs, I guess you could say. But yeah, The Weeknd is, especially on this, the big single from it, Can't Feel My Face, it's very, very, his voice and production, it's very Michael Jackson reminiscent. And the rest of the production is very dark sonically, and not challenging, but brooding. Brooding and very atmospheric on top of his lyrics, and has an amazing, amazing voice. And there is some, this is going to sound really weird, the vulgarity in it can actually be a bit off-putting at sometimes. And this is coming from a dude who listens to, as we've talked about, Slayer and Death Grips, but the actual vulgarity can be off-putting. But then you also think about certain movies and certain lyrics from other bands where they are intentionally off-putting as part of challenging their listener to, kind of maybe accept it or come to terms with what they're saying. So,
well, yeah, when I think of that, off-putting because I'll listen to anything. I really have no standards when it comes to offensive things in my music. But for some reason, Kanye's Yeezus album, it was so abrasively offensive in some places for me that I really have a hard time enjoying that album.
I ended up going back and amending my list to put it on there.
I remember that. Yeah.
I loved it. So
anyways, so that's it. I mean, I'll just list off real quick. My honorable mentions this year is Dreams by Beck.
Oh, that song is so good. I love that song.
I'm waiting for that album. That's going to be too. A good album. But that's kind of why it didn't make it on the list. It's a great song, but I'm expecting more. Then a song by Metric called The Shade. I really like that one. My kids like it. And then Best Coast song, Feeling Okay. Those are my honorable mentions.
Honorable mentions, I have Miguel's Wild Heart. Really great production. The reason it didn't make it is I feel the second half kind of falls off on the album. It becomes a bit too repetitive or a bit too just not as impactful as the first half. Deaf Heaven, New Bermuda. It's just not as good as Sunbather. And Sunbather is like upper echelon album, in my opinion. They tried to go a bit darker and a bit heavier with it, and they took out some of the shoegaze elements that really made Sunbather stand out. And once again, Shen made already made fun of me for this. The Carly Rae Jepsen album, Emotion. It's really, really good pop music. It's just really fun to listen to and put on, and it's better than most pop music that's coming out now. So,
cool.
Go listen to Kyle Kinane. I like this old stuff better. You're going to laugh until you cry.
Okay.
So, anything else to close out 2015?
No, I think we're done.
Cut.
We are done.
Do you have a New Year's resolution?
Wait, shoot. Sorry, my phone's doing whatever it wants now. New Year's resolution?
Yeah.
Real ones or ones for the radio?
Whatever you want. You could do a real one and a fake one.
Two truths and a lie.
Just do two truths and a lie. Do that.
No, I'll just, I don't want that. I have to think too hard to do that, dude. It's almost midnight, Central Time on December 30th. I want to, lose weight.
As do I.
I'm going to Florida to the beach in June. So I got 6 months to do this shit.
Dude, okay. I'm going to Bonnaroo in June and I want to lose a ton of weight before I go there. You're going to Florida in June. You want to lose weight before you go there. I'm thinking we should maybe do something together here.
Are you familiar with the website Fat Bet?
No.
It's pretty cool. I've done a Fat Bet with Jen and Lisa's Mike and a few people a while back. Where you basically, you do a contest. You go in, you log your progress.
Progress?
When did I become British? you
the advertisement.
Progress. Yes, the advert.
Aluminium.
Now, I saw the advert on the telly in my American accent. But anyways, you log your progress and then you can see, it literally charts it for you and puts it all in a grid so that you can. And there's usually some sort of a challenge, like, you know, whoever. And it's not you set your goal. And I don't think it shows your goal to other people. It just shows what your percentage toward your goal is and stuff like that. And then whoever is the closest to their goal at the end of whatever time period is the winner.
Oh.
And usually there's some sort of challenge, like I'll buy you a bottle of Jack if you win, or, you know,
I'll take you to Taco Bell.
I'll take you to Taco Bell and blow your diet. We can talk about that later. So,
I have a kid coming in like a week. We can.
I know.
So,
Beth just asked me about that tonight, and I was like, I think now.
It could be any minute. So hopefully, just be a good dad for the boy, Redding. My first son is Miles for Miles Davis, and the second one is Redding for Otis Redding. So,
we don't make this podcast stuff up. We actually are music fans.
Yeah.
my son's name is Elliot after Elliot Smith.
I wanted to name him Thelonious, but everyone vetoed that.
I would support you in that.
Thelonious, and we can call him Theo or TJ. Thelonious John. I'm just saying.
Theo.
I'm just saying. It would have been a great name. And fucking next year, resolution, see you way more often.
Yeah, right?
And Coop. I still haven't even met Coop in person.
Yeah, Coop hasn't met any of everybody else except for me.
Ugh. And then Chanel lives in D.C. We got to get him out. Oh, Chanel's coming out in February. Maybe we can get together in February and you can finally meet Chanel.
Yeah, and bring Coop along and you can meet Coop.
There we go. It would be one of the most awkward dinners ever.
Yeah.
So, what are we going to close out with?
Oh.
Something to usher in the new year.
Usher? Play some Usher?
I was going to say that Beck Dream Song.
Do it, yeah.
Because that's coming out next year, hopefully.
Yeah.
And it's a great song.
Is that a way that I can, like, backdoor put that on my best of 2016 list, too? Uh-huh.
No. Maybe.
I could bend the rules. It's my rules. I can do whatever I want.
You can do whatever you want. So for 2015 and the Static and Desertion
and
podcast.
The close of season 3.
Is this official close of season 3?
This is the official close of season 3, last show.
Yeah.
So, we're at like episode 27 or something of season 3.
We need to cut that.
Yeah.
For season 3 of the Static and Distortion podcast, I am Robert.
I am John.
And may all of your Christmases be bright.
And all of your New Year's right.
Be
drunken.
I'm going to bed at like 10. So,
I know.
All right. Have a good night, folks.
Bye-bye.